Well, 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 well. The Hemingways crowd. I see so many sexy, wonderful poets out here. But because their girlfriends hit, I'm not saying anything. I'd like to start with some thoughts. I'd like to start with some thoughts on what it is to be a poet. What happened to me one time was I sat down and read all of the people that I have been published with. I've been published with Leon Lee. I've been published with Gerald Stern. I've been published with so many people, Lucille Clifton, all of these people. And I think that all of you need to start doing what I did, and that is to take the time to go through every periodical that you've ever been published in, go through them, and actually look in the Poets Directory and see who you've been published with. Because other people will tell you, you know, whether you're black or white, that you're illiterate or that you're not this or that you're not that. Fuck all that. What you do is you look through and see who you are in the company of in those magazines, in those journals, and understand your place in this world no matter what anyone else has to say about you. I want to say something. Poetry is so interesting right now. Poetry is so hot. It's on fire in Pittsburgh. I got the book of Sheila Carter Jones, Every Hard Sweetness, and I read that from cover to cover and cried. It is absolutely a masterpiece. It is something that I think everyone should read and understand that poetry isn't about doing poetry like everyone else does it. It's about creating something different, but maybe sometimes merging with other poets and almost creating a school of poetry. I think a lot can be said by that book for Toy Derricotte, for Kaveh Khanum. A lot can be said for all of the poets that came through Kaveh Khanum. I got the chance to go to Kaveh Khanum. I was accepted, but I didn't have the money to actually go. But when I read some of the other poets, I see the influences. I see that we do have a similar way of writing. But not too similar, but just somewhat similar. Now, what I'd like to start with is a poem called Casino Way. It's from a book that I did many years ago, but I think that it has a lot of impact. When we lived in Homewood, it was supposed to be a place for people who were upwardly mobile, for African Americans that were upwardly mobile. And it was supposedly that. But there was something that happened one time. And I wrote this poem. And then what I did was I left out some things that were very important. When this person was shot, the bullet, the body came in our screen door. And I was standing behind the screen door. And the body hit me. The bullet came through his body completely and landed in my chest. But it was something, it was not all the way in, it was just, it could be pulled out, which my mother did quickly because she didn't want my father to find out how bad this was. And the poem was called Casino Way. Black and upwardly mobile, we live in a black enclave then. teachers, and other professionals all in a quiet alleyway until the day your wife shot you. You, this handsome, light-skinned black man with pomaded hair and a pencil-thin mustache, black matinee, idle, scholarly school teacher with fine suits and dreams for more. You, tired of her, had found another black woman, light with blonde hair, a woman who spoke good English and wore lovely clothing. You wanted her. Your ill-spoken wife, who wore her hair nappy, you wanted her and loved and you wanted her to move out. We, your neighbors, heard you argue, saw her weep, go in and get the shotgun and shoot you as you ran from your yard. Black matinee idol. So prim, so proper, your body slumped on our front door step, its lean weight against our screen. My mother, a nurse, checked your pulse from a crouched position behind you, pushing your deadness slightly forward. I was a child then, but I remember your blood. The police, her wails of shock at her own actions, the yellow gloves my mother put on her well-manicured hands to place bleach in water and wash the telltale signs of your suffering away. I remember us packing up and moving to a bigger house, moving away from the hard stone steps, from the entryway to peaceless existence, away from the cobblestoned alleyway to your death. Now, I have to do poetry that has a little bit of a joke to it. I mean, I think that life should have something that's a little bit of a joke. And I see people here that are interesting because they're always telling jokes. Can I be heard? Can you hear me? I have a big enough mouth. I have been accused by someone who's not here this evening of having no filter. I think that's damn good. Sermons from my mother. My mother that raised me wore a floral house frock, sweet with perfume all of the time, used to give me wisdom at the breakfast table, near the front door, in the front of the living and the dead. When she came down to the school, when someone snagged me with a fist and I snagged them back, wisdom dropping like quarters, dimes, and pennies in a Coinstar machine. Got to drop in more silver, cha-ching, cha-ching. Got to make that dollar. Got to tell you about this life. Baby, just a few words on death. If you ever do that which you done just did again, you are making ample room for your butt in hell. Yes, you are. My mother that raised me used to hunt me down to say, you seem to like men. You truly seem to almost have an addiction to them. You really do. That ain't ever good. A queen must control her court. Let him think he is a king, then snap that whip. If he got a little freak in him, he'll be fine. Sometimes he may even thank you. Yes, he will. Over dinner at a quiet restaurant, more coinage falling. The drop dimes of wisdom all over the table. The woman behind us listening when she really shouldn't, then fanning herself. My mother that raised me, sharing a sermon on sex, complete with gospel music stirring to it. Look, it is easy enough. Dumb girls can do it. You are smart. When he comes to you and he wants it, every time he wants it,
Don't mess around. Don't make it difficult him, because folks, men and women, gets tired of that shit. No isn't just another thing. No brings out the dog in folks, and they'll tear up, run in the streets, slathering like rabid canines, looking a little here, finding it there, leaving their underwear at that man's house, and their best shoes with a woman. Come on. Be about something. Just give it to him. Just let it happen. When the harm, what's the harm in being a little playful that way? Give it to him. Rock him into it. Nice and slow. Nice and smooth. Then it's over. Bam. Like that. Just like that. It's over. This is from a book I wrote, which will probably come back to me, but I enjoy the process of writing. As a person that didn't actually get a degree in writing, I didn't get a fine arts degree. I enjoy the process, the joy, the happiness of writing. I get up in the morning, I get myself a coffee, and I meditate, I get myself together, and then I'm in that zone for as long as I can be. Because around me, and I think all of you know this, there's so much drug use, so much violence, so many people who are floating and don't seem to have anything that they can hold on to. So I write and I read. The beloved teachers, the gift of flowering from the initiates. Have you given me bread and sustenance, and have I partaken of it, or have I languished in the anguish of the world and not extended my hand? It is winter a few years ago. I looked for an old book amongst the others. On its cover were the beautiful faces of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King. They seemed as if in spiritual communion, not wishing a little for this world, but much. They wanted a world in which spirituality was important and peace, not weapons and guns. They wanted a world that truly did not battle against tranquility. Martin Luther King died from assassination. Thich Nhat Hanh died decades later after years of peaceful, positive work and supplication from cancer. People self-immolate. People surrender themselves to decapitation. People face the wicked without weapons or hope simply to have a better word. Yet, do we listen? Have we seen? Do we bear any semblance of witness? We devour not things of sustenance every day, but ample portions of vitriol. As a child, I stared for hours at the photograph of Martin Luther King's slain body on the deck of the Lorraine Motel. I mourned his death and any hope for a decent world which went with them during that age and took decades to somewhat return. These days, many people who are younger than me don't believe there was and is a motorcycle. These days, many people who are younger than me don't believe there was and is hatred. They do not believe even those who stand before them are victims of violent physical hate crimes. They think if it is not said, it will not exist. They think this is as so. They think this as so many suffer and are destitute. I looked at the photograph of two great men and somehow superimposed pure white flowers, gardenias near them as a sign of their light, their mission, and their spirituality. We must look back. We must perceive our present. And even with hesitation, we must plan and then press forward. Don't get angry. Politics make people angry. This poem just came to me, and I'm going to read it. I don't want someone coming up to me and getting angry and everything. It's a poem that I think, you know, is kind of cute. And I think I'm hoping that some of you get a chuckle out of it instead of coming up to me later and telling me all about myself. You know, if you would buy me a soda or something when you did it, well, hell, say whatever the fuck you want to. And I think it's gonna rain. So much matters. Mad Hatters, everybody dreads the conditions. Folks carrying around placards, most of them signs about their superstitions. So many throngs, so much that's wrong. Who's not going to protest instead of just going along? The clouds keep growing, no change showing. Yes, I think it's gonna rain. Pretty sure it's gonna rain. This man says that man says the other, the third man doesn't know all the others are his brothers. Yes, I think it's time for rain. Them clouds up in the sky got more control than people do on the world as a whole. They may not vote or twist about, but at least they know their roles. They also know society works because there's freedom and common goals. They're going to get tired of hearing this politic or that. They're going to get tired of folks that solve their problems with combat. The storms of condition are going to swell the skies and shut people up. They're going to let some water fly. Yes, I think no matter who debates who, the truth is neither knows what the heck to do. Then they get angry if you say so. Now, that is also a clue. And my gosh, it's going to rain. Look up, child, it's going to rain. Rain on the ignorant, rain on those with brains, rain like it never needs to rain the same again, rain to cool those haters off, rain in the north and rain in the south, sog the chads and sog the men who think they could ever deny again that them chads were true, just wanted to cheat and lie to win. That's what folks always do. Yes, think it's gonna rain down on this place, rain down on every this and that, rain on the constituents who met up to wield their bats. Everybody hates life storms, life's weather, but why aren't any of them willing to work together? No doubt, it's gonna rain. It's gonna double down and rain. It's gonna dump down buckets. It's gonna heap rain down in trucks. Every square inch of humanity is going to grow some aqueducts. Don't need nothing less than the way mankind screams and shouts, shake down the storms, shake down the lightning, and flush big mouths out. What they all say doesn't matter. It's really what they do. Every one of them is breed anger and has spread anger and a bunch of hatred too. Rain on every evil word they ever could construe. Yes, whatever the clouds cannot keep restrained, whether cow dung or ice water, it's gonna dump all down like rain. While other people don't like difference, I'm gonna go through it quick. When I was a child, when I was raped, they took everything but the stereo. So I have a different way of being. I consider myself to be a woman, but a doctor once said, they took everything, so you're sort of in between. I think kind of being a eunuch is kind of sexy. I think it has a nice way about it. I don't talk about it very much because I lead a female life, because that's all I know how to lead. You know, I had the little feather pin with the pink, you know, the pink little feathers on it. I had all of that. I wouldn't know what to do with anything else. I mean, because there's nothing else. There's no role model. This poem is for David Bowie. I am dedicating it to someone wonderful who's here this evening, and that's Ziggy Edwards, who asked in Upagus for people to send poems about David Bowie, but he wasn't in my mind at that point. Then all of a sudden one morning I just saw this sexy image in my mind and the poem came to me. Bowie. It is always late at night for the nocturnal in a city of coal and bars. You can hear the human wolves howl in the dark. Take a bow beneath the full crazy moon. I was young then, and they had the television on loud. Its sound grew angry and feasted on the midnight air. The wolves stalked their prey, then took them down outside, chased them all the way down alleys through the fog of truths and confessions. Then someone beautiful came on the screen. He had on a corset, full makeup, and skin so powdered, so raw silk. He touched his body gently with one long hand and stared deeply into the television camera, knowingly. He was Ziggy Stardust. He was the imaginary. He was the true. He was David Bowie, his hair sensually perfected, his eyes difficult to turn away from. I had never seen anyone quite like him before. His cobra thin body, his lipstick rouge, melodic, seductive voice. He was this truth some still will not say about male, female, class, outward appearance. I watched all of his songs and heard his guitar and have seen no one like him before or after. Number two, ground control. Past lift off in this living. Does what we are in denial of about our existence take our very souls away? Spaceship of neglected self-truths. Do we step past everything unaware? Do we step, then do we float? Then are we unheard and unhearing? The stardust and all answers dissolving back into questions? Are we the life on Mars? I think if just for one time in life, be the quintessential life on Mars. I'm gonna talk about a couple of the types of poems I'm writing right now, but I'm not gonna read those poems. One of them is Earl's Percussionist, and what it's about is the use of music as a backdrop for poetry. And then I also am working with librettos. I love opera, but when I go, white people, unlike white people like you, don't want me to sit. They don't want me to be there. They question my ticket. They get the usher and all of this. And at some points, some of the best singers of opera are black females. Give the ladies a round. Because if I put up with that going to one performance, can you imagine what they go through and have not said and put on a beautiful dress and sang aria after aria? I'm working with the work of Bach, and I'd like to do two more poems. All right. One of my favorite authors is Boris Pasternak. He was a Russian poet and novelist. He is the man who gave us Dr. Zhivago. I think I've watched that movie 10 times. Pasternak, walking down a street in a country other than his own, wallowing in his own intonations. He strives to make sense of difference as something imprecise, unclear, and appreciated in those respects. He turns a corner physically and perceives a cafe, quaint tables. He eyes all of the human animals trying to understand themselves, trying to understand the externals, the markings he wears of his dreams, perception as the only flesh and bridge, the only route without struggle. Here's the last poem, and I'd like to say before I read it, Arlene Weiner, Judy Robinson, Ziggy Edward, Michael Worster, and Don Wentworth, you're part of the OGs. You're part of you're part of my set. You too, Joan. And it's good for you to have been here and have arranged a ride for me, because I am terrified of going places by myself for certain reasons. Interior landscapes, the border collie. This poem came from a dream about a dog I used to have. It is the country of fallow fields. In my dream, our car pulls off the road beside a fenced-in area. The grass is tall and merciful here. In this field, a border collie runs at top speed back and forth. My soul knows the dog as my dog who died years before. My heart bounds. I alight from the car through the evening's heat, climb through the fence, love pouring like painful nectar from me. God tells me in this dream, the dog has gone through many lifetimes, soul traveled, just to have this moment with me. I stand in the middle of the field, gray night sky to both sides of us, but dark clarity above, and I call to the dog, my arms open wide. Come to me, my beautiful dog. Oh, how long I have waited just to hold you. The dog knows me and leaps from a full run into my arms. The dog is as warm as love and reality. Then the moment passes, and the dog scurries joyously away into an enormous white church at the far end of the field. Its orange warm light resounding through the fallow and the full fields, then the gray and the vibrant purple. I know the white church to be heaven, and God assures me the dog is happy and safe there. I turn back to the car through the summer night's heat and am rested in my soul, rested in my dreams.